We start today with a reading from Hebrews chapter 1 verses 1 to 4 and chapter 2 verses 5 to 12. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many and various ways by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by a son, whom he appointed heir of all things. Through whom he also created the worlds. He is the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being. And he sustains all things by his powerful word. When he had made purifications for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become as much superior to angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. Now God did not subject the coming world, about which we are speaking, to angels. But someone has testified somewhere, "What are human beings that you are mindful of them, or mortals that you care for them? You have made them for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned them with glory and honor, subjecting all things under their feet. Now, in subjecting all things to them, God left nothing outside their control. As it is, we do not yet see everything in subjection to them, but we do see Jesus, who, for a little while, was made lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone. It was fitting that God, for whom and through whom all things exist, in bringing many children to glory, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through suffering. For the one who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one Father. For this reason, Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters, saying, 'I will proclaim your name to my brothers and sisters in the midst of the congregation. I will praise you.'" Our reading today is from Job chapter 1, verses 1. "There was once a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil." And chapter 2, verse 1 to 10. "One day the heavenly beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' Satan answered the Lord, 'From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking up and down on it.' The Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. He still persists in his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him for no reason.' Then Satan answered the Lord, 'Skin for skin, all that people have they will give to save their lives. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face.' The Lord said to Satan, 'Very well, he is in your power, only spare his life.' So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and inflicted loathsome sores on Job, from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Job took a potsherd from which to scrape himself and sat among the ashes. Then his wife said to him, 'Do you still persist in your integrity? Curse God and die.' But he said to her, 'You speak as any foolish woman would speak. Shall we receive the good at the hand of God and not receive the bad?' In all this, Job did not sin with his lips." And we have a gospel reading from Mark chapter 10 verses 2 to 16. Some Pharisees came, and to test him, they asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" He answered them, "What did Moses command you?" They said, "Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of dismissal and to divorce her." But Jesus said to them, "Because of your hardness of heart, he wrote this commandment for you. But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." Then in the house, the disciples asked him again about this matter. He said to them, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." People were bringing little children to him in order that he might touch them. And the disciples spoke sternly to them. But when Jesus saw this, he was indignant and said to them, "Let the children come to me. Do not stop them, for it is to such as these that the kingdom of God belongs. Truly I tell you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will never enter it." And he took them up in his arms, laid his hands on them, and blessed them. In this is the word of the Lord.
In asking me to conduct this service, Steve did the entire preparation, and so this sermon is largely Steve's work with some of my phraseology to make me feel comfortable delivering it. Thank you, Lachlan, for those readings. So, families. One thing we all share in common with each other and the characters in those readings is that we all belong in some form or other to families in some form or other. The church has long held up family life as one of its highest ideals, but we all know that not all families are ideal. So what makes families good families, well-functioning families, healthy families? Research shows us that a parent's interest in their child's education has much greater impact on the outcomes of that education than what goes on in school itself. Families are highly influential. And research also shows us that it is important to express appreciation within families. As someone once said, appreciation expressed is like fertilizer. Spread it around and everyone grows. In healthy families, power is shared. There is consistency in decision making. Plenty of encouragement. In families with the best relationships, I say there are 10 times the comments of praise, appreciation and affirmation as there are to every one of criticism. Sometimes, however, families become unhealthy for any number of reasons. Relationships break down and too often fail altogether. Our Gospel and Old Testament readings that we've just heard relate to situations like this. Remember when Job was in the midst of his suffering, his wife's advice? Curse God and die. And the Pharisees seek to trap Jesus with questions about divorce. Jesus, as he often does, deftly steps around the yes-no, right-wrong trap with a third possibility, and in doing so provides a radical new teaching. The unique partnership of a man and a woman described in Genesis has been severely violated by the time Deuteronomy was written. And it was that law from Deuteronomy that the Pharisees were asking Jesus about. In it, a man could divorce his wife simply if he'd changed his mind about her after the marriage. Or if it was something he didn't like about her, he had grown to dislike. He got tired of looking at her. She burnt his food, or if she was unfaithful. On the other hand, the man could not be found unfaithful. There's no legal obligation for him to be faithful in the first place. Numbers chapter 5, verses 11 to 31 also has something to say about fidelity or otherwise. It lays down a process to test whether a woman has been faithful or not, or unfaithful. If her husband has the slightest suspicion, he should take her to the priest. The priest curses her in writing on parchment, then washes the words off the parchment with bitter water, mixes them with the floor on the dirt of the with the dirt on the floor of the temple, and gives it to the woman to drink. The ritual was based on the premise that if the woman was innocent, she'd feel no ill effects. Her guilt would be obvious if she became sick. One wonders whether any woman, or for that matter any man, would go unaffected by such a humiliating experience. And it's against this historical background that Jesus speaks. He was pointing out how far they had moved from God's original intention for a man and a woman as spelled out in Genesis. Jesus was not establishing another legalism. He fought all the time against crowding the spiritual into statutory regulations. We do violence to the whole spirit and mind of Jesus if we conceive of him as a newer and greater Pharisee, the enactor of further ironclad and unchanging codes. Remember, also Jesus' affirmation, institutes are made for people, not people for institutions. And we need also to remember his boundless compassion. With that in mind, the original spiritual concept of marriage is made impossible when brutality, cruelty, and even indifference replace good interpersonal relating. And when the future possibilities and character of the children are threatened. To make Jesus an inflexible legalist is to distort beyond recognition the Son of Man who lives and speaks in the Gospels. Jesus says, "What God has joined together, man must not separate." And I believe that's precisely what Jesus was saying. Man must not separate, particularly in the unjust and humiliating ways which had been going on for centuries. Divorce is just the final confirmation of separation. The actual separation in heart and mind has happened long before that. It is not biblical law or the law of land that it separates us. It is our own actions. The Jesus who speaks says that the new commandment that he gives is that we love one another as he loves us. But it's also important to know that if love for one another breaks down, Jesus' love for us continues. Loving can be a risky business, but we know that Jesus is with us, not just when we succeed, but also when we fail. Perhaps particularly when we fail. Jesus was concerned with reversing situations in which people were being manipulated, humiliated, or were enduring relationships which created a lessening of self-worth. Above all, Jesus emphasized the justice which allows people to live in relationships which enhance their self-esteem, not diminish it. And that, I believe, is what today's readings are about. That we are created to know the fullness of life that Jesus promised. A fullness we can achieve as we try to live with one another as he loves us.